Hey, this is John Lee Dumas of the award-winning podcast, Entrepreneurs on Fire, and you're listening to the Excelsior Journeys with George Soroy. Prepare to ignite.
So would you say that that's kind of like the lightning bolt moment for
you? And that's
why
I taught myself how to draw, was actually the Little Mermaid, drawing stills of Ariel.
I've got better things to do tonight than die.
Sylvester jumped out of his chair and said, who the F is this?
I remember walking out of the theater with him saying, I'm going to write Halloween.
I'm rather impressed with your research. Rarely do people ask me about Children in the Corn.
It doesn't have to be perfect. Just do it. You know, throw some spaghetti against a wall. See if it sticks.
This is George Soroy saying to all of you, ever upward.
Welcome back to Excelsior Journeys, the road to creativity, part of the Podmatch Podcast Network. This is George Soroy, and thank you so much for being here. And one of the things that I really love to discover here on this show is when I speak with an author who is in a similar situation that I am when it comes to getting books finished. In my case, I signed with Ronan Weatherford a couple of years ago for From Parts Unknown, which started out as a video game concept, worked its way to a screenplay and became a simple novel, then got blown up into a five-part serial. And then once it got picked up by Ronan Weatherford, the decision was made to bring it down into a trilogy, but still keep the same content and everything. But with Excelsior, parts one and two were already done and released by my previous publisher, but part three is still in the works. It's a wild experience being able to pick up a project that has been worked on for so long and then just kind of get back into that world, get back into that mindset and see where everything goes and see how you add your own perspective, your own experiences since the previous one was done and to see what it looks like. And that is definitely what we have with my guest this week, Michael Hilton. Back in 2020, Michael released his novel, Bobby Robot, through a different publisher and looked like things were ready to kind of move forward in a really good way. And unfortunately, that was also the time when the whole world was shutting down from COVID. As years passed, Ronan Weatherford came in. They are now working with Michael on his series for Bobby Robot because parts two, three, and four are in the process of going through their edits and will be ready, hopefully, for release later this year. So this is a really interesting time for Michael to take a look back at how far this series has gone so far and what the plans for it are from here. So I'm really excited to have this conversation. So it is my pleasure to introduce my guest this week, Michael Hilton. Michael, how are you, sir?
Thanks for having me. This is a great honor, and I'm looking forward to our conversation today.
So can you tell us what the status is regarding the sequels for Bobby Robot? Obviously, the part of a larger story is part of the same series, but did you always see sequels to be in a part of this?
Yeah, I had always sort of planned for a trilogy. I like the number three. I like the rules of three, and trilogy just sounded like a good first act, second act, third act of a larger structure. And first one, Bobby Robot, is about this teenage boy who grows up on an AI-controlled planet, and he is the last in a line of experiments to restart the human race, and he keeps failing his tests that the bots put him through, and he's about to give up until a human girl crash lands on his planet and kind of tells him, hey, maybe everything that you've been taught on this world is not true. And it's interesting because the concept for this actually came to me a long, long time ago. And I had started writing a short story that actually became the second book. As I was thinking about turning this into a larger series, I was like, wow, we kind of need to go back and we need to revisit this character's origin. What would be kind of an interesting origin for this character? And then this idea of a boy being the only human on this AI governed planet kind of fell into my head, and the story kind of pieced itself together from there. I'm sure you as a writer know that sometimes we have these big character moments or these beats in the story, and there's that one thing that just kind of clicks everything into place. And so that was kind of the initial inception of this entire structure. So I had initially planned it as three books. And then as the series went over to Ronan Weatherford, we started taking a look at that second book, which was already written, it was already completed, and started working with our editor and started looking at, maybe we actually have two books worth of material here. This is a pretty long sequel. So ended up actually splitting it up. And so now what was three is now going to be a little bit of a longer series, and we get four books out of it. So a little extra bonus book. And I actually think that the narrative arc works even better this way. So that's kind of maybe a long answer to your question. But yeah, initially saw it as three books. Now we got four. And the first book has been re-released after COVID. And so we are hitting the ground running with the rest of the series.
Excellent. So it sounds like you got a quadrilogy on your hands.
Got a quadrilogy. Didn't imagine it that way, but this is how we end up sometimes.
And kudos to the team at Rona Weatherford for seeing that you had enough material to split that up split part two up into two books. I think that's a great way to not intimidate readers and thinking that they're about to get like an encyclopedia that's right there. But it turns out you got two very, very workable books that, according to what you just said, like it makes the narrative even better. So that's a bonus right there.
Yeah. And yeah, kudos to them. They've been just absolutely incredible to work with. COVID was such a time of uncertainty for a lot of reasons. And so when the rights transferred over to them, you just never know what you're kind of walking into. But I got to meet the founders, got to meet the team in person. And I mean, they just really, really believed in the book. And so much respect to them. They've been really incredible to work with. And even, you know, even on the side of helping to develop, you know, some of the story, because at the time when the rights transferred, the book was the sequel had almost been finished. And so to have somebody kind of on your side and believe in your own story lends, I think, that extra confidence to shaping it into something really incredible. So much respect to them. They've been great to work with.
And one of the things that I love to hear about, which on the show a lot, is what I call the road to creativity. And that's when you're on this one path, but then you experience something or read something, meet someone that just wants you to say, oh, I want to do that. And all of a sudden you're on that off ramp, you merge into other traffic, you're on this whole other path. What was it about writing itself that really set you down the path that you're on right now?
Yeah, you know, I think it all kind of goes back to sitting in a movie theater when I was 6 years old and mm-hmm. watching a movie. It was Star Wars, so I guess a little bit of a cliche origin story there for me. But that was really the first time that I remember thinking, wow, you know, the power of storytelling to move somebody is really something that I want to do. And, you know, of course, as a 6 year old, you don't have a multi-million-dollar studio at your disposal to make and sell. Yeah. I just started sitting down and started writing stories. And of course they were not very good, but as you continue to work on your craft and you start showing it to people. And I think that process of creating a world and creating characters and creating movement in that world, and then is almost transferring that to someone else's mind and seeing them go through sort of the same emotions that you had while you were writing that just felt really special and really powerful to me. And as I grew older, I think I really started to understand that the entire world, you know, we tell ourselves stories to understand the world. And so, you know, I think not to be too pretentious about being a writer or the craft, but I do think stories are very important. And I think the fact that we tell ourselves stories every day, all the time about our lives, I think that's how we make sense of the world. And if write good stories that move people or that shape people in some way, I think that's very, very special. So I just sort of continued from that point. And here we are today with a now quadrilogy in the works, and hopefully it'll continue and we'll continue with the, you know, the story that we're telling to hopefully shape people and have them come out of that with a really great experience.
I had a feeling that you and I were going to be kindred spirits just from the current situation that you have with the books and then with the inspiration, because when my parents took us to see Star Wars, it was the initial re-release. So this was back in 1978 when that mm-hmm. happened. And so it was really the first piece of music I ever remember hearing. And I only remember just like little bits and pieces of the experience sitting in the theater because I was so young. But I'll never forget when I was 6 years old, and on February 1st, 1983, that original film debuts on HBO. And sure enough, you know, like I'm sitting there right in the very front, right very close to the TV, and just being totally blown away. And all of a sudden, like all of the figures that I had already gotten from my parents for Christmas and everything just all clicked. And there it was. It was just like, oh, this is what it's like to create a world. This is what it's like to let your imagination just go places. I want to do that. And again, you know, like just like what you said, I didn't have a budget. I didn't have any sort of, I didn't have anyone else who could work on anything with me. So all I had were just the pads of paper that I kept getting from my grandfather. And so those suckers were filled with comic style panels with the most rudimentary pictures you could ever imagine. Because like my own artistic talent is next to nothing. And anything, if it was, you know, just basically just from all the stuff that I was absorbing at the time, it was Star Wars, it was Voltron, it was Transformers, it was G.I. Joe, it was Thundercats. It was all the stuff that, you know, that had just been just eaten up and processed and everything in me. And then all of a sudden just, you know, just spitting them out onto these comic panels. And that just became like the first step of creating a world. So I know exactly what you mean when you say that. So the stories that you were writing back then, were they also connected with Bobby Robot in some way, or was that something that came out later?
You know, I was much more of a fantasy nerd way, way back in the day. Lord of the Rings was a big thing at the time. And I mean, even before that, when I started writing, I had, you know, read those books. And the first really longer story that I had ever written, right, as a kid, you write little snippets of things and clips of things. And the first longer story that I had ever written, I had shown to my best friend at the time. And it was this high sort of epic fantasy. And I was really proud of it. I was like, man, this is really cool. We've got swords, we've got sorcery, we've got magic. And I remember my friend reading it. He had the, you know, the literal printed out pages. And when he was done, he handed it back to me. And he was like, you know, you just wrote Lord of the Rings, right? And I was like, no, no way. And then I look at it, and the opening scene is exactly the opening scene of Bilbo's birthday. And I just switched all the characters and all the names. But I think, you know, in the early stages of that, a lot of times, and they say this with any sort of art, is that when you first start out in your craft, a lot of what you're doing is just emulating other artists.
Yeah.
Those are the only references that you know. So that kind of makes its way into your art until you find your voice, until you find your own sort of way of writing or way of, you know, doing your craft. And so I always look back at that kind of fondly and say, wow, you know, my first really big work was Lord of the Rings. I definitely probably subconsciously plagiarized a lot of that. And so, yeah, I was a pretty big fantasy fan back in the day. And then as I grew a little bit older and still love fantasy, but science fiction is really sort of my thing now. I love the medium to tell, because I think the best science fiction is telling human stories, right? I think any sort of science fiction that focuses too much on the science without the human condition is sort of missing the point a little bit. I think, you know, you look at the greats, Philip K. Dick, you look at Heinlein, you look at some of the Asimov, early pioneers. Yeah. Asimov, yeah, you look at some of the early
Asimov,
pioneers.
Asimov, Bradbury, yeah, like all those guys.
Yes. And, you know, if you look at their stories, they were telling human stories just in the trappings of science fiction, because science fiction is a great medium for putting a magnifying glass on the human condition. And so I think as I grew older and I started to learn more about the world and you have these experiences, science fiction really became the dominant form of media, I think, in my life and what I love. And so that's what I started writing. But, you know, it all started off with fantasy way back in the day.
Nice. And really just like, you know, science fiction and fantasy, like they really do go hand in hand. It's not
they
just
do,
because
they're
not just because they're on the same shelves, like at the bookstore, but you know, they're, it's one of those things where just like you start thinking about like what we would love to see. And then we see like, you know, dragons and swords and, you know, magic and mystical energy and everything. And then all of a sudden it's just like, then it gets into what we could see. there's like that nice little mix of like science fantasy. So that's where you have like Star Wars and the legendary, you know, types of stories. And then leading into things like Arthur C. Clarke and like Ray Bradbury getting to Fahrenheit 451 and, you know, mm-hmm. the Isaac Asimov doing iRobot. Like that's great stuff. And it really challenges you to think about what, you know, what sort of society we're in right now, or what were the clues back then that could lead us down this rabbit hole to where we are, where this story takes place.
I think that you and I are very fortunate in that we sort of grew up with this fertile ground of all of this media and all these franchises, some that were, you know, leaning on the sort of mindless action, science fiction, fantasy type. And then we had these really deep stories to draw from. And I think as we grow older and we see the state of the society and we see empires rise and fall, and we look back at these works and we say, wow, this really has been going on for all of humanity. And so how can we kind of explore these themes in different trappings and different pieces of media and learn something about ourselves?
Yeah. Yeah. Like it's during those times. So you grew up in the 90s, correct?
I am a 90s kid. Yes, very much so.
Okay. So like when you said Star Wars originally, I was thinking back to like 77, but then it was the special editions. Okay.
Special editions. Yeah. I have a soft spot for the special editions. I know a lot of people don't like them, but that was my first encounter with Star Wars. So
yeah, that was 97. Yeah. There's a lot that I really like about those. You know, like I appreciate the fact that Lucas took the time to really kind of spread out the world a little bit more, 'cause that's what he always wanted. Like he always wanted to add those elements to it. The only thing that I always find myself fast forwarding past is the Jedi Rocks segment in Return of the Jedi. I can't abide by that. Like everything else.
I thought that was so cool when I saw it. And now I watch it as an adult and I cringe a little bit and I'm like,
oh yeah,
this is, yeah. Yeah. But I will say I have a lot more respect now because, you know, as you grow up and get older and he continues to tinker with it, with the Blu-ray releases and all of that, I'm just like, man, can you just like preserve your original story? But then I find myself in the same situation now with this re-release of Bobby Robot. I have the chance to tinker around with it a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I get it. Yeah. The artist is never done with their work. So I have a little mm-hmm. bit more grace for that at this point.
I did something very similar because my first, you know, looking at the first edition of Excelsior, the one that was self-published back in 2010, it became obsolete within about a year because I was basically just like looking at everything. And while I was starting up the second one, I realized like my characters were communicating telepathically. And I was like, well, they couldn't really do that in the first one. Well, they can now because I got picked up by a different publisher and I asked her just like, do you mind if I do a little tinkering with this one? She goes, go for it. It's going to be released as a second edition anyway. And so everything that had been bugging me since that initial release all went into this new version and it just made it so much better. And then when it got picked up by another publishing house, when the one I was working with decided to shut down, that was when they got their editor to take a look at it. Mm-hmm. And she took a sledgehammer to it and saw that there was a lot that needed to be fixed up. But now that it's done and, you know, like since all the work and everything went into fixing all of the issues with the first one and everything, that same editor was brilliant on working with me on the second one. And I can't think of any other spot where I can really improve upon it. The only thing that I could possibly do is add a couple of elements from the audio drama that I did back in 2023 for it. But other than that, I'm really happy with how it turned out. Thankfully, they are too.
Yeah. And I think sometimes we see these because with Bobby Robot, right, you know, the first publisher that had it, COVID, you know, just kind of ruined the planet, everything. And in some respects, it was probably a blessing in disguise because, you know, that first book came out before AI was really a big thing. And obviously the book deals with AI. And so I remember 2022 when, you know, ChatGPT and Midjourney and everything kind of blew up and our concept of what AI would look like in the future really changed. And this was at the time where we were kind of editing the first book and getting it ready for, publication again, and rights were being transferred and everything. And so I had a chance to go back to that first book. And some things that were conceptualized in the first edition, and there's not really a lot different in the first and second edition, but moving forward, we actually did a lot of edits on the second book, which is now the second and third book, because of AI. And I think if those books had come out before 2022, the story would probably be very different, because, and you even look back at some science fiction in the 90s and the 2000s, and I think that with AI being so prevalent in our lives now, and just, whatever you think about AI, it is here to stay. And it is, we interact with it on some respect in some way every single day. I think that that really impacts your vision of the future and what a society in the future would look like. Mm-hmm. If AI is so big in 2022, what does that look like in 1,000 years? Right. Yeah. And so, in some ways, it was a blessing in disguise, because I got to go in and I got to actually add a bunch of elements to explain, why AI was missing from certain areas of life, or what the characters were trying to accomplish and what the AI was trying to do. And I think it really just makes it a lot more believable and cohesive and whole now that you read the entire series. So, like I said, in some ways, it was a blessing in disguise that the rest of the series got delayed a little bit, because now I really feel like it's something that very well could happen in the future, now that we've kind of updated some of the elements of the story.
And you were able to successfully avoid a lot of the trappings that so many of the movies in the 90s were doing,
because
back then you had the internet in its infancy, and everyone was putting their own spin on what it could and couldn't do. So you have like Sandra Bullock being taken hostage by the internet and the
right.
And then you have Lawnmower Man 2 with Job showing scaffolds and everything, just saying that it's building a city when it's, and it just looks so like, almost like steampunk-esque. In a way, it's almost kind of charming just how much
it's kind of quaint
was missed. Yeah. And like Johnny Mnemonic and Virtuosity and Masterminds and Hackers. Mm-hmm. And it's wild. Just like, so you were able to avoid those trappings there and keep the technology from being dead before the book even comes out.
I think so. And it was a bit of a, dodging the bullet a little bit, in that it would have been a great story. But, 50 years from now, if you're looking back, I don't want that sort of charming, quaint aspect to it. I want it to be a bit timeless. So,
yeah. And then so as you were working through these stories, did you find that it was going in different directions than you originally expected?
It's interesting, because I plot everything to a T. I mean, if you look at my outlines, there are thousands and thousands and thousands of words, basically almost a quarter of what the book is going to be, because I always like adding a twist into the book or something that you don't expect. And I kind of have to work backwards from there. And so I find that if I just sit down with a general concept and write, I end up either writing myself into a corner or I write too much. So I tend to keep the plots pretty tight. And that's what happened with the first book. I didn't have to do a lot of edits with the first book, because I knew beat by beat exactly what was going to happen. But as you know, as you grow as a writer, you tend to try different things. And so for the second book, I kind of flew by the seat of my pants a little bit more. I had a general outline, but it was not the big, long, document that I had for the first one. And I actually found that that really just doesn't work for me. I think it can work for some people, but it really just doesn't work for me and the kinds of things that I'm trying to do. So that second book actually went through at least, I think, 5 drafts, legitimately just because I wrote myself into a corner. And so that was probably another thing that the delay benefited me, in that I was able to really just sit down and say, okay, let's kind of just start over here and get this right. So that one, I don't think I've ever edited a manuscript so much as I did with that second book. So yeah, that story kind of went in a direction that I was not intending, but it was not necessarily a good direction. So I kind of had to draw on the reins a little bit and tighten the story. But the book generally heads the way that I want to. Now, sometimes the characters, you'll be writing a scene and the characters will introduce something that seemingly of their own accord that you're like, oh, that's kind of interesting. But it's all within sort of the bounds of the initial plot, because I do tend to plot like crazy.
Mm-hmm. I'm right there with you.
I was going to ask what your kind of process is. Are you more of a plotter or more of a pantser, as they say?
I'm definitely more of a plotter. When I wrote those initial two books for Excelsior, a lot of the stories were part of other stories that I'd written when I was back in high school. Mm-hmm. And because this character goes back to 1992 with me. And the initial story about his first real mission, a lot of it is there from those original Steno notebooks that I would fill instead of filling them with homework assignments. And especially a lot of the second one, there was a lot of that one that was from that initial story way back when, and getting to revisit it and expand it and improve upon it vastly in the second book. But the third one, I always just had like some wouldn't it be cool moments. I never actually sat down and wrote the full story of this one. I knew what I wanted to do with it, but I never actually sat down and wrote it. And I think that's why it's a lot harder for this third mm-hmm. one to mm-hmm. get through. Because like when you're wrapping up a trilogy and you know, like you have to stick the landing.
Right.
And you need to make sure that everything ties up in a satisfactory way. And I really wanted to avoid the typical format that so many other part threes have, where it's just like part two ends with all the characters in the worst position. And then in part three, it starts with them getting out of that worst position and then big battle to wrap it all up. And so like, I wanted to avoid that for myself. What was your setup? Because I know obviously you have the quadrilogy now, but part four, the current part four, was originally part three. So what were your thoughts like as you were putting that one together?
Yeah, it was really interesting because obviously when you split a book, you don't want the reader to be just left on not just a cliffhanger, but literally just feeling like they just read half a book, right?
Yeah.
So I had to go back and I had to retool that second book to where maybe the action hadn't completed, you know, its full arc yet, because it was going to continue into what is now the third book. But I had to make it more of a character arc where the character was dealing with something in the beginning, and then that was sort of resolved or at least tied up by the end. So I ended up watching, you know, some movies that had done a part one, part two really well, exploring some other media that had seemingly maybe not felt like the action had ended, but had these character moments where as the audience, you felt some sort of resolution or some sort of satisfaction toward the end. And I kind of studied those, figuring out what I wanted to do with that. But it's kind of like you know, the second part of this, what was the trilogy, was supposed to be, hey, these characters are really not in a great situation here. Now for the third part, we've got something really cool that we're cooking up for that. But I did want them to end more on a down note. And again, that's probably that Star Wars original trilogy playing into my subconscious again. But I mean, it really has been shown, I think, that that second act leading into the third act does need to have bigger stakes. It does need to have your characters not always win the battle or win the day. They've got to be shown as human. They've got to show that, you know, their efforts are not always rewarded, and that sometimes, you know, evil does win even for the moment. And I think that's a really powerful thing to do in the second book of a trilogy. But then splitting it into two, yeah, it was going to have to be more, okay, what is going on with this character? What do we do with this character? And I think that's where the plotting versus just kind of flying by the seat of your pants, that balance really comes in. Because, you know, as writers know, and as maybe readers know, if you're just sitting down to write, then the characters are kind of in charge. You can develop more three-dimensional characters in some way. Whereas if you're plotting, the plot is going to be really tight, but then you're kind of restraining the character to this set path that you have, and you give them a little less freedom to tell you what the story is. So it's always about finding that balance. And I really had to do that for this, the second, now second and third book. Coming out of that, using that technique of flying by the seat of your pants a little bit more, the characters did lead me in some different directions. And so I actually had something to hold on to in that. Now that the second book had to be more of an emotional arc, the characters having these sort of big emotional beats gave me something, gave me some purchase to actually expand that a little bit so that by the end of the second book, the reader does feel satisfied, even though maybe things are not in the best situation for the characters.
Yeah, absolutely. And then going back a little bit more, like over to that first one. Now, I understand that you made the tweaks and everything to make things a little bit more up to date regarding the technology and what AI can really do. But there is that moment that all authors yearn for, and you got to experience it twice with the same book. When everything is all said and done, the rewriting is finished, the editing is finished, the formatting, the cover design, everything. And then all of a sudden that package arrives in the mail, you open it up and there is your author copy staring you in the face. Now, what was it like getting that first one of this new telling of it, of the story with Ronan Weatherford?
Yeah, I mean, it's very surreal because you go through so much with that first draft and there's so much history behind it. This manuscript is what, you know, landed me an agent and kind of opened that door into the larger world of publishing. And so, you know, my agent worked very hard to make sure that the story survived through COVID and could have a second life. And Ronan Weatherford was great about taking, you know, a chance on this story and really believing in it. And so I think there was a lot of emotions going on when you first open up that box. You're like, man, thank goodness that this thing survived. Like, we made it. I didn't know if we were going to make it through COVID. There's just a lot of gratitude, I think. Gratitude for, I realize that this is a team effort. And so I'm just very grateful for everybody who believed in this, the readers who read it, you know, the first time around and the people who discovered it this time around. You know, this book would not be here without everyone who believed in it. So I think one of the first things is just gratitude that I felt opening that box and seeing the cover. And the cover is really super cool. So if you haven't seen it, go ahead, check it out. Type it into Amazon or Barnes and Noble and check out the cover. I think it's just, you know, it's very surreal to see somebody believe in your vision and to produce this thing sort of in a collaborative effort and see your vision come to life. So yeah, I would say just gratitude and just a lot of excitement for where this book is going.
Yeah, it is a fantastic cover. It looks so cool.
Oh, thank you.
I'm excited, you know, for you for the rest of the series and everything. And did you wind up doing a new launch party when this edition came out?
We did, yeah, because the launch party actually got canceled in 2020. I think it came out something like 5 days before the lockdown. So the launch party that we had, yeah, got canceled. So we actually did the first launch party this time around. So it was 5.5 years in the making, but we finally got around to it. It was great. A lot of people came out and, you know, bought the book and did some book signings and had a party. And so it was a really great time.
Nice. That's terrific. And so I am pumped for to see where the rest of the series goes. And I would, once the last one is out there, I'd love to have you back on to kind of do a nice little kind of like reflection on the whole series and see where the future lies, you know, for this franchise and anything else beyond. And if there was someone that was out there that had an idea that had been working on it and then had to step away from it for a while, but then they look back at it and just realize that, you know, this really has potential to be something, what would you recommend that they do? Like the first thing that you would recommend they do?
Yeah, so I used to be part of a writers group and we produced a lot of great authors in that group. And so a lot of new writers that would come in, if they ever asked my advice about something along these lines, about what ideas are going to reach fruition in terms of being published, I think you got to have a little bit of delusion as an author. You've got to see your vision through and trust your instincts. I know it sounds a little cliche, but if there's something that you really believe in that excites you as a writer and as a reader, I think you should, you know, write as a reader in mind. What do you want to see on the bookshelf? What really excites you, just dive headfirst into that. You've just kind of got to believe yourself. You can always go back and you can edit it. And as you've seen with, you know, your book and my book and our stories, these are going to go through iterative processes. But that initial kernel of an idea that really excites you, I would just say go for it, because you never know, 5.5 years later, you may be having a book launch party that got canceled. And so things do come back around and people recognize good ideas. And there's a lot of luck involved. The stars have to align. So if something doesn't work out, set it on the shelf for a while. And you never know, sometimes that opportunity will come back around for you.
And where can my listeners find you on social media?
Our Instagram, Michael Hilton is writing. We are going to start our TikTok and YouTube shorts soon, probably under the same name. But yeah, go give me a follow on Instagram. We make a lot of funny and dumb videos, and a lot of it's kind of centered around the book community. So give us a follow and like and comment, and we'd like to keep the conversation going over there.
I hope that all of you just keep this in mind, that even if you have to either take the time away from a finished product or go back to one that was still in the works, it's never too late. You can always just go back and get those works back up and running, blow the dust off of them, see where they wind up taking you. Definitely keep in mind, if you're doing a science fiction one, where the technology currently is. Since technology is constantly changing throughout every day. But just remember that these stories need to get out there. You believe in them, that they have merit, that they should be able to get out there into the world. So do it. You can only publish books that are finished. So by all means, go forth, finish these books, get them wrapped up, get them going. If you have just a screenplay, you know, get that film made. If you have a play that you've written, get it up, get it mounted, see what happens. If you have a piece of music that you've been writing, a song, lay it down, see where it goes. You know, like, there is so much that you can do once the writing part of it is either finished or in the process of getting finished. Just move forward, get those projects off your plate, because you're going to feel so much better when you do that too. You're going to feel like there's not going to be any regret. You're not going to feel like you've been leaving anything on the table. Just go ahead, finish those works, get them out there, because in these crazy times, we need your stories, your vision, your ideas now more than ever. So for Michael Hilton, this is George Soroy saying to all of you, ever upward, and I will see you next week. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Excelsior Journeys. I hope it was both inspiring and entertaining. Special thanks to Zach Comtois for providing new music for the intro and outro. Please take a moment to leave a rate and review on Apple Podcasts. And if you enjoy the show, please share it with your friends and subscribe to your platform of choice by going to heesgotit.com/podcasts. While there, you can also fill out the application to be a guest, inquire about sponsorship opportunities, and click on the Buy Me a Coffee link if you wish to give your support to the show. All interaction is very much appreciated. If you have a question, comment, or suggestion for the show, please direct it to George@heesgotit.com.